Hey, it's Brian Cook, your host here. Wanted to let you know we now have t-shirts. Would you like to support the podcast? Have you noticed that I can't get a sponsor because this show's too filthy? Hey, it'd be great if some people ordered shirts. They're great looking shirts. Go to estoymerchandise.com, E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com. You'll find competitive erotic fanfiction on the right-hand side. Click on that and you can order shirts. There's men's and women's sizes. It's a great design by my buddy Mark Palm in Seattle. He does all of our amazing poster art. Please support the podcast. It would help us out a ton. That's estoymerchandise.com. E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 157 of the Competitive Erotic Fanfiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you've found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Hey, sorry for the break. It's been a hectic couple of months. These might not come out every week, but I'm getting them out when I can. Working full-time now, and makes it tough to put this out every week. But thanks for sticking with me. Thanks for listening. Today's episode is great. And upcoming shows include February 21st at the Virgil. Not a ton on the road right now, but stay tuned for more dates in the Northeast. LA folks, you can also come check out my new show February 5th at the Hollywood Improv Lab. It's called Reunited, Real Comedy, Fake Sitcoms. It involves panels of casts of sitcoms that never existed except in the minds of myself and my co-host Josh Androsky. That features Matt Bronger, Eliza Skinner, and more special guests to be announced. 8:30 p.m. Come check that out. Today's show was recorded November 15th, 2015 at The Virgil, and it features Claire O'Kane, Patrick Sussmilch, Kristen Rand, John Schauble, and Zach Sims reading pieces they wrote in advance based upon topics of their choosing. Enjoy. Your first round one competitor who's brought a prepared piece tonight, Mr. Zach Sims.
Oh, thank you, guys. Oh, thank you so much. My piece this evening is about the famed 1992 United States men's basketball team, otherwise known as the Dream Team. Okay. Charles Barkley was pissed. It was July 1st, 1992, and the U.S. men's Olympic basketball team had just defeated Argentina 128-87. It was not good enough for the round mound of rebound, which is what people call Charles Barkley sometimes. As the rest of the team filed in, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Karl Malone, John Stockton, Chris Mullin, Patrick Ewing, David Robinson, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Clyde Drexler, and Christian Laettner for some reason. There was something thick hanging in the air. For some, it was frustration. For others, it was passion. That was terrible, Barkley said. Our effort was terrible. Our play was terrible. And the fact that Clyde Drexler refuses to acknowledge that we're all shaving our heads instead of just running around balding is also indeed terrible. Charles is right, said Michael Jordan, and I'm willing to give anybody two to one odds that he's wrong. I'm willing to give anyone 2-to-1 odds that he's wrong. Seriously, I'll bet anybody that Charles's subjective statement is incorrect. Anybody in for 1,000? What are you really mad about, Charles? Carl Malone asked. We just dominated that team, and I'm also doing the balding thing, and you don't seem to mind. Yeah, that's right, said Christian Laettner. Shut up, Christian, shouted the rest of the Dream Team. And he went back to folding towels. Charles is right, agreed John Stockton as he put down his collection of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles toys. We're not playing like a team. We need to do everything together. Play together, work together, love together. That's when David Robinson, Clyde Drexler, and Chris Mullin realized they had some dry cleaning to pick up and left the room. What do you mean? Charles asked. You know exactly what I mean, Stockton said as he dropped his shorts. What is that? Asked Scottie Pippen. It's so small. A slightly above average sized penis, Stockton answered. Stop it right there, screamed MJ. I'm the greatest basketball player that's ever lived, and if anybody's going to start this orgy, it's me. And I'll bet anybody here $10,000 that I won't. That reasoning is terrible, Barkley said. I mean, you have control over if you're going to start an orgy or not. Just then, Mike started Frenching Charles Barkley. Starting with slow, supple kisses, his tongue dancing around Barkley's mouth like a ballerina performing the Nutcracker, or an equally elegant reference. Maybe Swan Lake. Stockton made eyes with Pippin from across the room, and the two ran to each other, but Larry Bird was standing in their way, smoking Winston's and whittling a dildo out of balsa wood. I gotcha, John, said Carl Malone as he set a perfect pick for Stockton and a clear lane right into Pippin's erect member. As Scotty entered Stockton from behind, he said, this is amazing. It's like I'm fucking a little tiny person without any of the horrific consequences. Seriously, Stockton said, I'm like 6'1". That's tall. But the time for talking was over, and Stockton removed himself from Pippin's Johnson, turned around and began filleting him, cupping his balls, knowing just when to lick his taint. Oh my God, John, you're so good about with fundamentals, Pippin screamed as he gyrated with pleasure like one of those cymbal playing monkeys in an earthquake. I bet you $5,000 I can make you come, shouted MJ, as he and Barkley rubbed their perfectly round and bald heads against each other. Again, I just don't know how that's a... Oh my God! Barkley exclaimed as he ejaculated ropes and ropes of semen into the middle of the locker room. He came for days. So much cum came out of his body that his penis shriveled to its smallest size ever of 7.5 inches. As all of this was happening, the old pros, Bird and Magic, set to the side, taking it all in. I mean, I want to get involved. I love team play, said Magic, but it seems like maybe I shouldn't. You know, the whole HIV thing. Larry stoically pulled on his Winston, breathed in deep, and whispered into Magic's ear. It's like my mama said back in West Baden Springs, Indiana. You can always do hand stuff. Larry ripped off Magic's workout pants with one motion and used his left hand to crank on Magic's wand fiercely, as if he was trying to start a lawnmower that was out of gas. With his other hand, he shoved his newly whittled dildo up Magic's back door. Showtime, Magic screamed as he came entirely on Larry's creepy hillbilly mustache, turning it from wheat-colored blonde to cum-colored white, which is also the name of an unreleased Hank Williams track. Larry shook his head like a buxom blonde coming out of the ocean, and the cum landed squarely on Charles's perfect pile of jism. Hey, guys, want me to towel off all that splooge? Leitner asked. Shut up, Christian, bellowed a voice from the back. I'm about to show these boys how we do things downtown. Suddenly, the entire arena shook. Was the arena collapsing? Was there an earthquake? Was it a genetically mutated chupacabra wreaking havoc throughout Barcelona? No. It was something even more terrifying. Patrick Ewing's cock. Ewing's cock was so big it had 18 average-sized cocks inside of it. Like a Russian nesting doll, but instead of little Russian figurines, it was standard-sized cocks. Ewing thought of that time John Starks was wearing one of those Big Johnson t-shirts, and remembering the joy he felt in that moment made him instantly hard. The erection so large it nearly filled the room and enveloped Christian Leitner. That's right. Leitner had a new home now, inside of Patrick Ewing's boner. Honestly, he didn't really notice a difference. The time has come, Jordan shouted. The prophecy must be fulfilled. Jordan continued the shout. The remaining team members formed a line and assumed the position. Ewing then began to penetrate each and every one of them, thrusting his hog into each teammate's firm buttocks. Like, very, very firm. They all did a shit ton of squats. As he left each player, they came super hard onto the other's ejaculate. A mound was forming and moving. It was becoming a life. The cum oozed together, becoming a ball and levitated. A basketball. The ball of cum stayed suspended in the air. Ewing grunted, heaved, and shouted, Excelsior! As he came a river onto the ball. It then began to shake, rattle, and vibrate. Drained of all their man juice, each member of the Dream Team lowered their heads in reverence, They heard the stories. They knew what was happening. Suddenly, the basketball began to take a new shape. A human shape. The cum was a man. A 6'8" man chiseled out of granite and a lot of cum. The cum turned a beautiful chocolate skin with a receding hairline. "You're wrong, Charles," the cum man said. "We're doing the balding thing now." "Is it true?" Michael asked. "Are you the chosen one? The man made from all of our cums to take my place as the greatest player ever and give me more time to bet on peewee football games?" "I am that cum man," that cum man said. "What do we call you?" Magic asked. "James. LeBron James." Then they all went to Wendy's and had spicy chicken sandwiches. That's it!
Thank you, Zach. Zach Sims, keep it going for your second competitor, Mr. Patrick Sussmilch.
Okay, upstairs, a whole lot of physical comedy. More than will probably work on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, just, I tripped. People were running around. Let me adjust this. I am writing, it is based on an entry from John Adams' journal when him and Ben Franklin had to share a hotel bed together. True story. September 9th, 1776, the delegates were on their way to Staten Island to negotiate a possible end to the American Revolution with General Howe. They were looking for an inn to spend the night. John Adams tried to enjoy the New Jersey countryside from atop his horse, but the incessant ramblings of Benjamin Franklin made the act all but impossible. "And that's how I invented the Franklin stove," boasted Franklin from the adjoining carriage. Adams could take no more. "Franklin stove, you named it after yourself. Does that not strike you as self-aggrandizing?" asked Adams. "Not at all," replied Franklin. "I had the providence and the initiative to create such a useful contraption. Should I not be remembered for my work? Long after my death, the world will still use my Franklin stove, or my Franklin focals, or even the Franklin fins, and think of me." "Harumph! Is there not one modest bone in your body, Franklin?" Franklin smiled. "Not yet." Franklin was, of course, talking about Adams's penis, which in those times people probably considered an actual bone because everyone was an idiot and thought mice spontaneously appeared out of grain. The innuendo was lost on Adams. The third member of their delegation, youngest signer of the Declaration of Independence and renowned racist, Edward Rutledge, spoke up. "There's an inn up ahead. Perhaps they still have rooms available," said Rutledge. "Also, I think the Negro should be kicked out of the Continental Army," he added. The three entered the inn. It was dilapidated and inconsequential, but it had open rooms. Unfortunately, it could not accommodate all of them. Two of the men would have to share a bed. Rutledge quickly ran into a room. "Sorry, fellows, seems this room is all to me," he yelled. "Also, I have 50 slaves," he added as he slammed the door. He popped it open once again. "The black kind, not that indentured servant garbage." He slammed the door once more. Adams and Franklin walked into the room. It was small, the bed touching two of the corners. One minuscule window provided ventilation. The men quickly turned their backs to each other and changed into their pajamas. Adams found himself mesmerized by Franklin's surprisingly muscular shadow dancing across the wall in front of him. Part of him wished to sneak a peek, but he dared not. "Have I told you about the latest invention I'm working on? It's a mechanical chair that, upon pulling of a lever, reclines into a supine position. I call it the Frankliner." Adams rolled his eyes, shut the window, and climbed into bed. Next lines of dialogue are taken right from the journal. "Oh," exclaimed Franklin, "don't shut the window, we shall be suffocated. But I'm afraid of the evening air, it's quite a chill and I don't wish to catch cold." And then actual quote, "The air within this chamber will soon be, and indeed is now, worse than that without doors. Come, open the window and come to bed, and I will convince you." Oh. A shiver ran down Adam's spine, not from the chilled September air, but from the prospect of hot man-on-man action. He threw open the window and dived into bed. Their faces were within inches of each other. The human body, by respiration and perspiration, which is again another real quote, destroys a gallon of air in a minute. Having two such purses in this room, especially if we were to perform a strenuous activity. Franklin inched even closer. Well, without an open window, we would suffocate within an hour. Franklin gently pressed his lips against Adams's. And we wouldn't want that, he concluded. The two began furiously making out. It was pretty hot for them, but by today's standards would have been super gross, since back then dental hygiene was just rubbing pine cones on your teeth or something. They cast off their pajamas and exiled the sheets from the bed, for there was a tacit agreement that the passionate lovemaking about to transpire should not be hidden from view. Their bodies were a stark contrast. Franklin had the taut and toned body of an Olympic swimmer, and Adams looked exactly like Paul Giamatti. They kneeled upon the bed, stroking each other's cocks, never breaking eye contact. Franklin jammed his fingers into Adams's mouth, and he sucked on them like they were a cough drop and he had a terrible cold and was about to give a TED talk. Sufficiently lubricated, Franklin inserted his fingers into Adams's asshole, making a come hither motion, stimulating Adams's prostate. My God, what is that you are doing? Squealed Adams. I've discovered that roughly 2 inches within a man's rectum lies a nodule that, when stimulated, creates the most intense pleasure. I call it the Franklin. Adams wetted his fingers and reciprocated the favor. The two spent a moment milking each other's Franklins, their moans barely contained. In the adjacent room, Edward Rutledge could hear everything. He casually ran his fingertips up and down his chest and stomach, eventually sliding his hand into his pantaloons. He thought about slavery. What other knowledge of a coital purview do you possess? Asked Adams. Through my experiments, I found that the Franklin responds most favorably to electricity. Franklin held up a metal key tied to a kite string. I call it Franklining. Adams was so distracted by the fuckstorm inside that he hadn't noticed it was actually storming outside. Do you wish me to Franklin your Franklin? Asked Franklin. Yes. Franklin, my Franklin, Franklin, yelled Adams. Franklin obliged. He threw the kite out the window. It instantly caught an updraft and sailed into the darkened clouds, descending upon New Brunswick. Franklin, Franklin to Adams, Franklin. Hard. Suddenly there was a flash of light and a stream of lightning cascaded down the kite string into Adams's puckered boy pussy. And danced upon his Franklin. The intense pleasure sent Adams over the edge, and he began to ferociously spasm, his body ejecting more ejaculate than any one man should have. It was like the Boston Tea Party, only instead of tea being dumped, it was cum. And instead of the Boston Harbor, it was Franklin's face. Adams collapsed in a catatonic symphony of pleasure. He quickly fell asleep. Franklin quietly locked over to his possessions and unrolled his own personal copy of the Declaration of Independence. Of the 54 signatures, all but two were crossed off. He ran a line through Adams's signature. Only one remained, that of Edward Rutledge.
Patrick Sussmilch. Giving on for Kristen Rand.
All right. Hi. Okay. Thank you. It was in the afternoon at Cedars-Sinai, and the sun was setting outside of his window. He awoke, fluttering his eyes open. His eyelids were heavy. It felt as if he had been awakened from a long night of dreaming. His surroundings were unfamiliar. This wasn't his bed. This weren't his sheets. He reached his hand up to his face to rub his eyes, and he noticed his bracelet. Confused thoughts swirled through his head, and the last thing he remembered was being smothered in breasts, and then black. Suddenly, from the side of his bed, he heard a sound. He was so weak he could barely turn his head, but now he knew he wasn't alone in the room. "Hi, Lamar," said the voice. "It's me, Chloe. Thank God you're alive. I didn't think you were gonna make it." Lamar wasn't sure who it was standing there beside his bed. You'd think the sound of such a distinctive, unbearable, and nasal shrill he would remember, but he couldn't make the connection. Despite the fact that she was a stranger to him, he mustered up one syllable. "Hi," he said. Chloe placed her hand on his and then ran her 4-inch acrylic nails up his arm. "I can't believe this. All our time apart, and we're finally together again." Lamar's memory wasn't working. He didn't know who this Chloe woman was. His mind was so clouded, he couldn't recall any details other than grainy visions of debauchery the night before he faded away. Lamar didn't know he had been in a coma, or that he'd been unconscious for 3 days, or that his wife, although technically they had both signed divorce papers that had never officially been filed, and they'd both been openly sleeping with other people, Chloe was there by his side. He couldn't place where he recognized her from, but he liked the looks of her. She had long blonde hair, a full set of lips, and an ass you could rest 2 TV dinners on. And then she started rubbing the top of his head, and it triggered something. His eyes closed. He saw short visions of his old life with his wife. No, wait, he says. "My wife was brunette and kind of chubby. And not like real-life chubby, but like definitely Hollywood chubby. And like her eyes were like deep-set and vacant, kind of like a Cocker Spaniel or some shit." Lamar said, his voice cracking from days of not speaking. "Shh, Lamar," she says, placing her finger over his lips. "It's me. Believe me, I look different now. I've taken the time we've been apart to focus on me. Before, when we were together, I was just focused on me and capitalizing on our relationship. But since you left, I've just been focusing on me." Lamar was still totally lost and not sure if he could trust this woman, but she swiftly walked over and closed the door to his hospital room and dimmed the lights. Before he knew it, she had strolled back over to his bed and she hiked up her skirt. She unapologetically climbed on top of him, straddling her husband, the coma patient. "I've missed you," she leans forward and whispered into his ear. "Touch me." She grabs his hands and forcefully places them on her ass. One of the IV tubes in his hand snaps off, but she doesn't care. She touches her lips to his. Although they are chapped and dry, she doesn't mind. She's had worse things on her mouth. She kisses him. "If you don't remember me, maybe this will jog your memory." She kisses him again, and the kiss is magnetic. Lamar, having just literally 5 minutes ago woken up from a coma, felt the kiss surge through his body and stimulate every inch of him. He tongued her mouth as he squeezed her ample behind. She reached her hand behind, between his legs, and felt his massive cock grow harder. "Ow, fuck!" he moans, unsure of what's causing the sudden pain. "Oh, sorry. Looks like your catheter is still in there," Chloe says. "I'm just gonna pull it out, okay? It'll be fine. It'll be like ripping off a Band-Aid." Lamar was horny. "Okay," he says. She removes the catheter and throws the tube on the floor. "I can't wait much longer. I'm so wet," she said. "My pussy is aching for you. It's been so long." She leans in and kisses him again, and she rips open her blouse, revealing her Kardashian breasts. They're like pretty regular, average breasts. Listen, this is not the body part they're really known for. Despite IVs and catheters being ripped from his body, his sexual appetite for her feels unyielding. She's hot and tight and nubile, and she smells good, and her kisses are more than enough to get Lamar erect. He was beginning to believe her. She must be his wife. Their chemistry was undeniable. "What happened to us? How did we end up apart?" he began to think, but then he realized she was sliding his thick chocolate member inside of her, and he got lost in the moment. She was riding him, doing all the work, and he was glad. He had been in a coma for 3 days, and his body was weak, but not too weak to give her every inch of his rock-hard love dart. They were both insatiable. It's almost as if he hadn't just 3 days before been in a private room in a whorehouse, and she hadn't been plowed by yet another famous professional basketball player with a huge black cream stick. She moaned in delight. She had missed her husband. She wanted to lay it down on him so he'd never stray again. She wanted his soup bone in her broth, and she was making it happen so she didn't lose him like before. Just then, there was a pounding on the door. Chloe, let me in! It's Scott! Scott, Chloe's notoriously drunk brother-in-law, was banging at Lamar's hospital room door. He was bombed, as always, mumbling something about a trademark. Is he awake? Scott screamed. I need him to sign this release. I have 25,000 t-shirts ready for sale. I just need his John Hancock. Chloe giggled. Don't worry, Scott. I've got his Hancock right here. She didn't dismount, and she grinded her hips harder and took him in deeper. Go away, she yelled. Come back in 20 minutes. Lamar was having so much trouble comprehending everything that was going on. It was all still so much of a blur. Who was Scott? What were the t-shirts for? Who the hell wakes up in a hospital bed and gets fucked immediately? Those answers didn't matter to him right now as he was deep inside of Chloe's muscular cave.
Oh God, I'm so close!
Chloe screams, fuck, I'm so close, I'm going to come! And then, suddenly, from near the window in the room, another voice. Baby, you're doing so great. Arch your back a little bit more. Lamar, do you want to use this massage oil on her back? The lighting isn't the best, but I think it could add some sheen on her back and butt. It'd be really great for this shot.
Ah, Mom, get back behind the curtain, Jesus! Give me some fucking space, literally. Seriously, you're so annoying.
Sorry, Lamar, Chloe says. That's my manager. Just ignore her. She's a vapid, monstrous cunt, but I have to give her 10% of my income for giving birth to me. Chris began to recede back into the curtains as she was ordered. Actually, Mom, give me my fucking phone, Chloe demanded as she forcefully continued to grind on her husband's lap. Chris peeked back out timidly and handed her daughter her phone before silently stepping into the curtains, wrapping herself in the drapes to assume her discreet observation position. Lamar wasn't sure if he was in the middle of a fever dream or a nightmare or if she was really even his wife, but he was 7 inches deep inside of a beautiful woman who was about to climax, and he was harder than ever. Chloe turned on her phone and opened up the camera to selfie mode as she began to squeal as she gazed upon her own reflection. Don't stop, she yells, as she maintains fierce and unbroken eye contact with herself. I'm coming, she growls and makes horrifying grunts as she rides her body on top of his. Lamar wants to bust, but he doesn't know if he's going to be able to. A wave of bewilderment. He wants to come, but he's too confused. He's weak, and frankly, he's gone numb from the waist down. Suddenly, he gasps, and his eyes roll back, and he loses consciousness. Rather than coming, he fortunately slips back into his coma.
Lamar? Lamar!
Chloe is bummed, but she leans in and whispers, "Don't worry, my love. I'll be right here waiting for you." Chris emerges from where she's been hiding. Holy shit, Chloe. Keeping up with the coma is going to be a total success. I'm getting Seacrest on the phone now. Tell me you're spelling coma with a K, you fucking idiot. Chloe snaps. Of course I am, she replies. She lets out one last orgasmic squeak while handing her body cam to her mother. Good.
Kristen Rand. Keep it going for John Schottel. Taking his sweet ass time all the way from the back of the room.
Yeah!
There he is.
Hey, Brian. Hey, guys. Thank you for having me. This one is topical as per the movie release. The party was already in full swing. Conversations being held, jokes being told, harmless flirting happening all the while. But that all stopped when he entered. His perfectly round head framed the backlit doorway. The host of the party, Violet, stood up violently. No one fucking invited you, Charlie Brown. But as long as you're here, you might as well fuck. Everyone was at the party. His sister, Sally, that one black kid Charles Schulz added only after someone wrote in and was like, why don't you have a black guy in your comic strip? And he was like, oh yeah, I should totally have a black guy. Even his dog Snoopy was there with his androgynous bird sidekick Woodstock. The two animals were holed up near the food table having outrageously loud interspecies sex. And frankly, making a ton of people uncomfortable. Suffice it to say, the cheese plate was untouched. And far past room temperature. Alive with glee for the first time in years, Charlie Brown stripped down in an instant. It quickly became apparent that the carpet did in fact match the drapes in his case. as he revealed a skinny shaft with an overly round bulbous head, complete with one lonely curly hair growing out the tip. Even his dick looked like a loser. Charlie Brown began pacing the room to find some trouble to get into. And by trouble, I mean straight up pussy, or butt, or whatever. He was just needed some human contact, you know? Before long, his gaze landed on two girls in the corner, using a baseball bat as a double-ended dildo. It was Peppermint Patty and her longtime acquaintance, Marcy. The two of them had always been polite to Chuck, unlike the rest of the gang who treated him like a Jehovah's Witness with leprosy trying to get them to join a pyramid scheme outside of a grocery store. We're kind of busy here, Chuck, gasped Patty in between strokes. Maybe you could find someone else to disappoint, Marcy chimed in. Dejected, he left the raspy-voiced ball player and his subordinate as their wide-open catcher's mitt swallowed both ends of the bat like Lady and the Tramp eating the same piece of spaghetti. You know, just like totally hetero stuff, you know? He noticed his best friend Linus had just finished up making violent squirt all over the drapes, and he was using his trusty blanket to mop up all the fluids. Charlie Brown sauntered up to Violet, intent on thanking her for letting him into the party. Hey, Violet, maybe you'd like to... Nope! She cut him off abruptly. His shoulders slumped forward. For a brief second, he thought about leaving. But suddenly, he saw a shadowy figure in the background, almost hazy, shrouded in mystery. Another outcast, perhaps? He staggered through a thick cloud of dust to find this mysterious character was no other than his longtime chum, Pigpen. So covered in grime, it was like accidental blackface. Pigpen took a second and looked him up and down, and finally, in a gravelly voice, some would say unhealthy for a child, fine, let's get this over with. He unbuttoned his overalls that looked like Dennis the Menace had died in them. And he spread his cheeks wide. His ass was filthy. It smelled like a Bonnaroo porta potty. But Charlie Brown didn't mind. He was just happy to be included. He lubed up and got to work. His technique was sloppy and his pumping was off tempo, like the motor of the car he would later use to kill himself in his own garage. After only a few moments, Pigpen turned around in disgust. Is that honestly the best that you've got? It feels like I'm being fucked by a slinky with intimacy issues. I'm literally riddled with hemorrhoids, and what you just did is the worst thing that's ever happened to my ass. It's true what they say about you, Charlie Brown. You're hopeless. Completely hopeless. Pigpen stormed off, probably to fist himself in a pile of used diapers while he thought about how he's going to vote Republican for the rest of his life.
Political.
Charlie Brown, now alone and defeated, he felt a prickling sensation on the back of his neck. He could feel someone staring at him. He searched the room. He found a pair of hazel eyes sandwiched between jet black hair and a dark blue dress. It was Lucy Van Pelt. And her gaze alone made his dick inflate like his inevitable therapy costs. After what seemed like an eternity, she consented. And in one fluid motion, she beckoned him to enter her. Hiking up her dress, exposing her bald snatch, she laid on the ground with her legs spread wide and felt herself up like she was trying to find a ripe avocado.
You've all done it.
Charlie Brown raced over, little Chuck in hands, almost exploding from excitement. He was so close he could feel the heat coming off of her genitals, and with one last thrust, ah! Lucy pulled the pussy away at the very last second. Causing Charlie Brown to fly in the air and land directly on his back. In many ways, Lucy's genitals were much like a football. leathery with deep crevices, touched by dozens of concussed black men in a day. Still political. As he lay there, Lucy stood directly over him. Like I would ever let a washout like you get some of this. She turned to address the party. Charlie Brown actually thought I was going to let him fuck me. The whole party began to laugh and poor Charlie Brown as she spit in his face. Lucy left to go get fingered by Schroeder, because obviously after years of playing the piano, his hands had become so nimble he could play a cervix like a Mozart concerto. Imagine Edward Scissorhands, but it's like dildos instead of knives. As Charlie Brown lay on the floor, he couldn't help but smile a little bit. Little did the rest of the party know that the only thing that truly got him off was being treated like pure shit. Unbeknownst to everyone, he came hard that night. Seriously hard. As he lay there in pure ecstasy, he thought back to some advice that his grandfather had given him before he passed away. And his grandfather always said, "Wah, wah, 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 wah." And that made all the difference.
John Schaubel. And your final round one competitor, Claire O'Kane.
Hello. It's a sultry August evening in New York City, the biggest apple of them all. Matt Damon and Ben Affleck adjust each other's sweaty balls before taking the stage at the Angelica Film Center. Ben's fat dick, as seen in the movie Gone Girl, can't seem to handle all the excitement and is starting to show through his Gucci suit pants. A producer gives them the high sign and they walk on stage in front of an adoring crowd of 100+ creative types, the kind with fuck you money, and HBO personalities. Tonight, they will announce the winner of HBO's Project Greenlight. Claire O'Kane sits nervously toward the front of the stage. She adjusts her sticky balls and looks down at her possible acceptance speech, which is just a Pokemon card she found on the ground earlier with the words, "I'm a boss bitch" on it. Matt addresses the crowd. Tonight, we will reveal the winner of Project Greenlight. We were so happy with all the short film submissions we received this year, but unfortunately only one is allowed to make the cut. Claire thinks about the short she entered called Big Daddy Dale, a political farce about a guy named Dale who tries to run for president, but his fat dick was just too much of a distraction for the American public. She hoped that Ben could somehow relate and that this would clinch her victory. The idea of this made her want to clinch her victory. Hard. Real hard. "I'm too wet for this right now," she thought, and discreetly folded a napkin and placed it in between her half-Asian thighs. And the winner is... Ben Affleck croaked. Claire crossed her fingers under the table and looked deep into Ben's eyes as they glistened from the stage. "Claire O'Kane!" Claire jolted up as if she had already known she had won. The sopping wet napkin fell to the floor and a flustered Bill Maher scurried across the floor to pick it up. "My collection is almost complete," he yelled, and jerked off all the way to the after party. Claire hopped on stage and shook the clammy hands of both Matt and Ben. We can't wait to collaborate with you, Claire," Matt and Ben stammered simultaneously. Claire raised an eyebrow and smiled a little. She thought to herself, "Just you wait, fuckboys. Just you wait." The first day of shooting had arrived and Claire was preparing for the tasks of the day or whatever. The script they had given Claire to direct was the newest Farley Brothers vehicle called Fat Chance, about a guy named Chance who ends up winning the lottery but is too fat to do anything about it. Whatever that meant. She had also learned earlier in the process that for whatever reason, HBO did not have enough money to cast anyone outside of the HBO family. So her entire cast consisted of people who have been on HBO already in one form or another. Claire moseyed on over to the craft service table to see just that, her cast. A group of actors consisting of Larry David, Jeff Garlin, the aforementioned horny as fuck Bill Maher, Robert Wool, that's right, Arliss himself, the guy who played Hodor from Game of Thrones, Dwayne The Rock Ballers Johnson, and to meet the diversity quota, the hot Asian lady who fucked Tim Robbins in the first episode of The Brink. Everyone greeted Claire warmly, and she immediately felt the fuck vibe. It's gonna be a great day of shooting, guys, she said as she picked up a bagel. The group agreed as they each tried to make eye contact with the winning director. Everyone was silent for a moment as they watched Claire examine her onion bagel. Claire then noticed the group watching her every move. She smirked and took two fingers and slowly started poking them through the hole of the bagel. Slowly. Sensually. You know, like a wiener pushing through a clam. The group's jaws collectively dropped and a pool of drool collected on the floor. One by one, each cast member cautiously approached their director and took turns putting their fingers through the hole of the onion bagel. Bill Maher was the last to approach. He took the bagel from Claire's hands and said, like a child at the playground to his bored father, "Watch what I can do, Daddy." Claire had requested that everyone call her Daddy during production. Bill Maher whipped out his politically incorrect meat knife and began cutting the bagel in half with it. His dick was literally shaped like a dull knife. Claire stood there stoically as he sawed through the bread swiftly and accurately. He took the two halves in his hands and presented them to Claire. "Cream cheese?" he asked coyly. And Claire closed her eyes and nodded. Jizz cum squirted out of the end of Bill's fleshy point onto the bagel, leaving it dripping in thick, creamy splooge. Jeff Garlin saw this and immediately leapt at the bagel, guzzling it down and shouting between bites, "I just want someone to eat cheese with!" Referencing his own 2007 indie rom-com, "I Want Someone to Eat Cheese With." Everyone took this as the cue to get buck-ass naked and slam each other's wieners together next to the craft service table. At some point, the hot Asian lady from The Brink left to go play Candy Crush in her car, making it a full-on dong fest. Larry David sucked on Robert Wool's dollar sign-shaped dick while getting fucked in the ass by Dwayne Johnson's rock-hard Johnson Rock. Bill Maher licked a crucifix while fingering his own butthole to be edgy. And Hodor stood in the corner silently weeping as a small dark wet spot appeared on the front of his pants. He had come. Hard. Hodor. Claire took this all in, leaning on the craft service table and eating a carrot stick. She laughed to herself and scanned the room, making sure the GoPros she had set up to record this freak happening were on and running. The whole sticky scene had been caught on tape. Finally, it ended. There was nothing left but a pile of hot cum, cold hummus, and heaving, fleshy half-chub smushed against Dwayne Johnson's giant back as he waited like a rubber ducky in the naughty fluids. Jeff Garlin slowly rose from the pile of bodies and dragged his feet as he walked toward Claire. He then apologized for yelling at her that one time she was working backstage at one of his stand-up shows when she brought him a cheeseburger like he requested, but then he yelled in her face for getting him said burger because he couldn't actually eat it because he said he was diabetic and she should have known better. This really happened. She pat him on the back and sent him back to his trailer made of cheese. Claire looked at the scene before her, using her hands to simulate the framing of a movie screen or whatever it is that assholes do. She took a deep breath in through her nose and sighed. "I smell a hit," she whispered. The movie bombed 6 months later. Thank you.
Claire O'Kane. Claire, you can stay right here. Let's get all the round one competitors back to the stage. OK. Careful on those stairs, everybody. All right, in a moment, you guys are going to be voting on a winner, but first, I'm just going to remind you what everybody read. We started with Zach Sims with the 1992 Dream Team, then Patrick Sussmilch with John Adams and Ben Franklin, Kristen Rand with Lamar Odom and Khloe Kardashian, John Schauble with Charlie Brown, and finally, Claire O'Kane with Project Greenlight. So, pick a favorite, starting with Zach Sims, the 1992 Dream Team. Patrick Sussmilch, John Adams, and Ben Franklin. Kristen Rand, Lamar Odom, and Khloe Kardashian. John Schauble, Charlie Brown. And Claire O'Kane, Project Greenlight. That's close, but I think that's Patrick Sussmilch with John Adams and Benjamin Franklin. Let him hear it.
You're round one champion.
He's never won anything in his life before.
That does it for round one. To hear round two, you can download episode 158 next week. And if you like what you've heard, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes. For more details on upcoming shows, you can follow me on Twitter at Brian Cooking or the show at CE Fanfic. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.